It's important we look at the facts.
Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.
Hello and welcome to another Planet Holyrood. I'm Paul Hutchin, political editor of the Daily Record. Joining me this week to chew over the latest political events are Hannah Roger, our chief reporter at the Sunday Mail, and Ben Borland, who's editor of the Scottish Daily Express. So it's been another busy week in the never-ending story of the police investigation into SNP finances. Not quite as manic for Hamza Yousaf, the First Minister, but hardly a walk in the park either. So Hannah, let's start with you. I suppose one of the main things this week was Colin Beattie returning to the Parliament. He was the SNP treasurer, arrested and then released without charge. And he showed up at Holyrood and he gave differing accounts, shall we say, of his knowledge of the motorhome issue. What did you make of that?
I think that...
Were you persuaded? Did you find it convincing?
Well, which account are you talking about? I mean, it could be the first one, it could be the second one. Did he know, didn't he know? I mean, that really was an example of how not to handle anything of importance, really. You know, he clearly was sort of ambushed by journalists, but he would have known that he was going to get questioned by journalists as soon as he rocked up to Parliament. And, you know, despite saying that he wasn't going to comment on the police investigation, which, let's be clear, he absolutely should not be doing, as it's a live police investigation, he managed to drop an absolute clanger. He was doing pretty well. He was doing okay, you know, didn't say anything controversial. And then suddenly he decides to say that he had no knowledge of the motorhome purchase. And then how many hours later was it, Paul?
About 4 hours later, something like that.
Aye. Of course, us in the media, we get blamed for this. But because of the media coverage of his statement, he felt the need to correct the record and tell us that, in fact, he was aware of the purchase from the company accounts. I mean, you couldn't make it up, really. It was just complete bungling incompetence. You know,
yeah, and it was like, you know, I'm not going to give you a story, and then proceeded to give us a story, which was very good of him. And what did you make of that line when he, I think he was asked by a journalist from the Times, "Is this the worst moment of your life?" And he said something about, "No, I was in Beirut."
Beirut, yeah. I mean, fair enough. He was in Beirut. Can't really argue that Beirut would be worse than what's going on right now. But I would say hats off to the journalist who asked that question, because it was a very good question. But
do you think that the SNP comms side, which was pretty tight for so long, was it wheels falling off the motorhome, do you think?
Well, I mean, who knows anymore what's going on with the SNP comms? I mean, they've lost their chief of or head of communications. I think they're advertising for that just now. But, you know, the people who are in the SNP comms team, it's not like they're all a bunch of idiots who have just come out of, you know, like school or whatever. Like, they have been, there's a lot of them who have been doing this for a long time. You know, they're experienced. So they should know how to handle this. But to be honest, I don't want to encourage them to do anything differently, because it would be bad for us. So, yeah, I just think, like, quite clearly you could see the press officer in the background with Colin Beattie, and again with Nicola Sturgeon, actually, this week, the same woman in the background, you know, clearly trying to desperately get Colin Beattie away from the journalist, but she was unsuccessful. But it just kind of, I don't know, it just looks very odd, the whole thing. Whole thing's odd.
Yeah, I think that was Sarah Masson, who I think if she's getting paid overtime is going to be quite a rich woman, because she seems to be putting in one hell of a shift, frankly. Ben, just on the other bits that was sort of related to Beattie, Nicola Sturgeon also showed up at the Parliament. If you remember, she'd stayed away the previous week in order not to overshadow Hamza Yousaf and his statement. And she was obviously doorstepped as well. What did you make of what she said? I mean, she didn't really say much, but it did seem to dominate the headlines the day after.
Again, it was a question about, you know, a question that put words in her mouth. She was asked, has this been a total nightmare? And she agreed, not in so many words, but then there you go, Nicola Sturgeon, this is my worst nightmare. I thought it was a very stage-managed event. I didn't understand why John Swinney was standing behind her.
I didn't get that either. I thought that was really weird. It looked like he was kind of her minder or something.
Yeah, you know,
a bit of backup, political support.
But he's...
What about Colin Beattie? Where's poor Colin Beattie's support? He's been arrested.
I mean, he's a more anonymous figure. I mean, I think, Colin Beattie's probably a stranger in his own home. No one knows him walking around the garden lobby, but with Sturgeon, it's always a bit of a circus, isn't it?
Do you know that Sturgeon, sorry, Ben, I feel like I've totally hijacked your question, but see the Sturgeon thing, the bit that did my absolute head in was when, you know, it's this tack that she uses saying, because of the current situation, you know, I really wish that I could tell you what I really think, but I just can't. I'm sorry, but, you know, believe me, I would. It's like, I'm sorry, where have you been for the last 2 years?
Yeah.
You know, you had 2 years to say what was actually going on and to say what you really thought, you know?
I know.
You had two years to say we have not been doing anything wrong and everything's fine. So why wait until conveniently you can't say anything because the police have arrested your husband, you know, to decide to say that you can't say anything? I mean, it's just absolute nonsense.
It was sort of stage-managed humility, wasn't it? I mean,
she just sounded... I'm sure the last few weeks have been a nightmare, but she sounded awful. She sounded like someone... She was really sort of ragged... Her voice was kind of hoarse. She just sounded like someone on the edge.
Well, your voice right now?
A bit like me, yeah. I'm probably equally on the edge. But I don't know. I'm not sure it was such a good idea, really. I don't think anyone would.
Hey, Hannah, what do you think?
Sturgeon stayed away.
Is this SNP melodrama? Is it going to make a Netflix series, do you think, Hannah?
I don't think it would make a Netflix series. I think it might be more like a Channel 5 kind of Sunday afternoon series.
Channel 5, that's pretty brutal. Not even Channel 4.
No, I mean, absolutely not Channel 4. Maybe, like, nah, Channel 5. I'm going to say Channel 5.
I think Channel 4. I mean, they did a good job of the Brexit drama. Was it Benedict Cumberbatch?
Oh, that. Yeah. The Dominic Cummings.
Cummings.
Yeah.
Who do you think? Who do you think would play Sturgeon and who do you think would play Murrow?
Ooh.
Scarlett Johansson to play Nicola Sturgeon.
Now I know you're taking it.
I'm going to say the obvious. Maybe I shouldn't. But there's a well-known, iconic Scottish comedy duo who could... Anyway,
yeah, moving on, Ben. Let's go to Westminster and the civil war that's brewing there as well. Hannah, just talk us through the sort of the nonsense that was going on between Ian Blackford and his replacement as Westminster leader, Stephen Flynn.
Yeah, gladly. I'll gladly talk to you about this. So, as we know, Stephen Flynn took over from Ian Blackford in December?
Yeah.
So Stephen Flynn took over as the Westminster leader for the SNP in December. And, you know, it's fair to say it's not been the most amicable transition, particularly because there's been... The way that Ian Blackford lost his position, there was this coup by the Tuesday Club where they all meet up and play football and eat curry and do whatever on a Tuesday. So all these folk conspired against Ian Blackford to chuck him out. So it's not been ideal since then between the two of them. But Ian Blackford's obviously made some comments regarding the SNP Westminster finances, because we know that the auditors, as well as stepping away from the central SNP accounting, they've also dropped the Westminster accounts as well. And Ian Blackford had made some comments about the fact that, you know, categorically we will have new auditors in place by the deadline, which is the end of May. And if they don't have these auditors in place and they don't get their accounts submitted on time, then they essentially are going to lose over £1 million in short money, which is a massive problem for them. You know, staff would have to be cut, etc. So Stephen Flynn was asked about these comments and he said, you know, well, essentially somebody who's not in charge shouldn't really be making any assurances like this, which you can kind of see. But then there's also been a bit of to and fro about what information was passed over to Stephen Flynn when he took over. So Ian Blackford claims that he did give him a full briefing about the finances. He gave his team, you know, the information about the auditor, etc. Whereas Stephen Flynn says that he didn't find out about the auditor stepping down, I think he said, the 10th of February. So there's obviously contradicting stuff going on there. So there's been a little bit of a war between them going on this week. But then, of course, last night, Stephen Flynn delighted us with a picture on Twitter of him and Ian Blackford sharing a drink in the terrace at Westminster, and said it was something like, you know, it's all in the past. Now we have to look to the future. And the two of them smiling as if we're all, you know, idiots who can't see that it's a political stunt and nothing else.
It was a very touching photograph. Hannah, you worked the Westminster beat. I mean, do you think that they still hate each other's guts, or have they actually genuinely made up?
Oh, no, they still hate each other's guts.
Yeah.
I would say.
So, Ben, everywhere you look, whether it's like Holyrood, Westminster or Party HQ, the SNP seems to be in disarray. I mean, just how serious is it for the SNP at Westminster if they cannot find replacement auditors?
Yeah, very, I mean, huge, huge. The SNP is reliant on public money these days. They've no wealthy backers anymore, aside from bequests from people often who are overseas and don't really understand what the SNP have done to Scotland, who leave large chunks of money in their will. The only money they get is from Westminster and the House of Commons short money and top-ups from the Electoral Commission. And if they don't have auditors, quite rightly, they won't be given public money. There's a theory that, the SNP does have around £750,000 sitting in its accounts, or it did at the end of 2021, that's owed to the branches. So branches are entitled to 25% of membership income. And I think it was Robin McAlpine put forward the theory that, as a kind of nuclear option to save the party from going bust, they can basically dip into that money. But again, it's only going to last so long. I honestly don't think the Electoral Commission can allow this to happen. The SNP are going to have auditors appointed for them, someone appointed externally by the Electoral Commission who can come in and prepare these books, because the party can't survive without public money. It's an existential threat to the Nats, and no wonder they're all sweating. And if Stephen Flynn and Ian Blackford think a joke-posed photo of them laughing and joking on the terrace is going to kind of fool people that the party's not in absolute dire straits, then they must be absolute mugs. Hannah, I missed that.
We're just talking about the crisis there. So you've got auditors walking away from the Westminster Group and the party more widely. You've got civil war in the Westminster Group, big tensions and splits in the Holyrood Group, and this police investigation. I mean, what needs to happen for Humza Yousaf to turn the corner and for things just to become manageable for him?
That is a good question, which I think Humza's probably asking as well. I think one of the main things that does need to happen is the police investigation needs to conclude in some form, you know, so whether that is charges being brought against somebody or the police, you know, closing the investigation without any charges. And that would almost be worse, I would say, because it would then be up to the SNP to explain exactly what's been going on. And, you know, they're not that likely to do that. But I think, yeah, once the police investigation has kind of quietened down and is out of the way, I think that might give Humza a bit more sort of breathing room, because people aren't going to be constantly bringing it up. And, you know, I guess just simple things like people in the party not briefing against other people. But then again, that makes our job very, very boring. So I wouldn't recommend that.
I agree. I think that the main thing is the police investigation. While that is ongoing, the SNP cannot move forward, and they're going to be like sort of cats on a hot tin roof. Things like the auditors, I think eventually that will resolve itself.
The auditors has to resolve itself, right? Because I was under the impression that if they couldn't find auditors, the Electoral Commission appoints their own.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so ultimately they will be audited. It's not like they can just continue without that.
It's almost a political equivalent of a company going insolvent, though, and you know, administrators been brought in.
Yeah.
If that happens, they're no longer in charge of their own financial destiny, if you like.
Yeah, and there may have to be layoffs and whatnot, and it's a pretty horrible situation.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just draw a line under SNP meltdown part 8. Part 8 or part 9, I've forgotten which bit.
I think we're on part 123 by now.
Good, okay. Season 8, part 13. Ben, the Scottish Tory conference starts tomorrow. A lot of Express leaders Tory supporters. What sort of reception do you think Rishi Sunak is going to get amongst the Scottish Tory faithful?
I think he'll get a warm reception. I think he's steadied the ship. Obviously, there's been no shortage of turmoil down the road in London over the past few years. I don't think even the most fervently anti-Tory voter would argue that since Rishi Sunak's come in, he has done a good job. You know, he's kept a lid on some of the infighting. He seems to just be a calm, sensible pair of hands. The economy's kind of settling down. Obviously, we were in a hell of a situation with inflation and the cost of living and everything. So it's not a crisis that can be solved overnight, but we seem to be heading slowly in the right direction.
It's not an inspiring message, though, is it? I've cleaned up the mess.
I've heard worse messages.
You know, my predecessor crashed the car and I've managed to get out of the ditch. And even though we haven't to pay for that car crash, I'd like you to thank me for it.
It's not the most inspiring message. But as I say, I've heard worse. He's also slowly closing the gap on Labour. I think there's a little bit of optimism in the Tory ranks now. Compared to where we could have been, I think the party's in quite a good state. And obviously, coming to Scotland, it's you know, what do they say? It's a shooty in for him. He's the SNP turmoil is going to make the Tory conference a very happy place to be.
And I wonder if it strikes you every time a Tory Prime Minister comes to Scotland, they never seem to go and walk about or do any public events. It's always very stage managed, take security.
I guess they're worried about getting egged.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just going to be another fleeting visit from Rishi Sunak, isn't it? He's not going to be meeting actual voters. He's going to shake a few Tory hands and then go back south.
Yeah, I mean, like, heaven forbid a Tory Prime Minister might actually want to meet real people in Scotland. You know, it just does not happen.
They're treated like, excuse my French, they're treated like crap. It really gets my goat. I have to say, it really does.
Hold on.
600,000 people in Scotland vote Conservative.
Absolutely.
800,000 at times. And what? We're all these right-wing lunatics who deserve to be abused in the streets.
But even those 600,000 folk are going to pay higher interest rates, higher inflation, because of what the Conservative government did. Now, those things are not the sole preserve of the Tories, but Liz Truss made that a whole lot worse. So people are hurting just now, partly because of Conservative policy. So is it any wonder that if a Conservative Prime Minister went walkabout, he's going to get some robust feedback?
You're hurting because of SNP policies.
In terms of the schools, you're right.
You're not telling me that the SNP aren't more damaging to Scotland than the Conservatives.
Well, here's how I'd put it. Well, the NHS is a matter for the SNP. So if there's a backlog, that's on them. The attainment gap, that's on the SNP. The ferries is on the SNP. But things of like money in your pocket, interest rates, inflation, that's Liz Truss and what she did.
What I'm saying is, if inflation and some of the cost of living, which is a global issue, a global crisis, why should the Conservatives be given this? You know, hostile.
Well, independent studies have suggested that Truss's budget
is damaging. Given a free ride.
Public services are a disaster zone, and that's on the SNP. But if we're talking about the economy, I think it was maybe the Resolution Foundation. They estimated that the Truss quarting budget cost us £30 billion. That's why Sunak is having to raise corporation tax, raise other taxes in order to clean up that mess. So you know, we are all paying higher taxes. We're paying higher mortgage bills, and some of the inflation, not all of it, some of it is on the Tories as well. So I just go back to the point. Is it any wonder that Conservatives would get robust feedback if they went on a walkabout down Sauchie Hall Street?
Okay, obviously, Tory Prime Ministers, they're reluctant to go and walk around the streets of Glasgow, Edinburgh, Dundee, whatever, in case they're faced with, you know, criticism. But I think actually, like, they probably need to hear that criticism. We can't have a debate, we can't expect them to understand all the problems if they're hiding from the people who've got those problems in the first place. Do you know what I mean?
No, I mean, I'm sorry, I kind of got a bit carried away there, but I mean, that's not something that any, you know,
I'm not saying people should be abused, okay? I'm not saying politicians deserve to be abused. Of course not. Of course they don't. But what I think is important is robust discussion. And yeah, okay, some things people are not going to like the policies that you bring in. That doesn't mean it's okay for you to hide from them because you don't want to hear it.
No, but I mean, When do any politicians go and meet the actual public?
A lot? All the time?
I mean, usually they're out on stage-managed press calls.
Mostly, but not always. But I think the Tories are unique in that, in terms of the Prime Ministers. They're very reluctant to meet normal folk. You know, they'll go and meet donors, they'll go and meet business owners, they'll go and meet party activists, but you know, you won't get public events.
Well, maybe they should. I mean, maybe Rishi Sunak should go and walk about. And, you know, let's see what happens. Let's see how embarrassing.
Exactly my point. We've agreed. Finally.
Motion passed unanimously. Brilliant. Yep. We're all in agreement. Good. Right. Okay. Good week, bad week. Let's start with you, Hannah.
Ian Blackford, I think he's had a pretty bad week in terms of, as we've already discussed, these sorts of, you know, very public criticisms of him by his own colleagues. And then he's forced to jump in a smiley photograph with Stephen Flynn to try and make everything look better. But speaking of good week, I think Stephen Flynn actually, like, nothing to do with the Blackford stuff, but he gave like quite an interesting speech at the Institute for Government on Tuesday. And, you know, just thinking about it, when he first took over as leader, he did his first Prime Minister's Questions and he was pretty ropey. And, you know, I think now he's actually really coming into his role as the Westminster leader for the SNP. I think, you know, he's quite sharp on policy stuff, on his arguments, and also with all this financial stuff. You know, I'm not saying he is being honest or not, but he is appearing at least to be kind of quite forthright and quite honest with people about, you know, dates and times and what he knew and when he knew it and things like that. And I think, you know, he is kind of, he's actually doing a pretty good job in that regard. So
he's quite good on his feet. He's quite a fluent speaker as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And he doesn't ramble on or speak in sort of these grand sort of statements. He just kind of says it like it is. And I think that, yeah, he's doing pretty well.
Ben, how about you? Who's sitting on the throne this week for you?
Douglas Ross.
What? How come?
I think he's had a good week. I think he's had a good few weeks. I think he looks statesmanlike compared to Humza Yousaf. He had a good FMQs today, I thought, bringing up the ferry fiasco and the bill now estimated to be above 300 million.
Wasn't there a story last week that, you know, some MSPs wanted a change of leadership over the vote Labour strategy?
I did see that. Would it not be some MPs were more? I mean, personally, as I've said before, I'm in favour of tactical voting. I think it's a good idea. I think it would actually lead the Conservatives to get more seats. I think it's certainly something that was worth suggesting. I would have liked to have seen Douglas Ross stand up to London a bit more and say, look, I'm on the ground here. I know what people in Scotland want, and what they want first and foremost is rid of the Nats. And tactical voting is the way to do that. He kind of backed down a bit, but never mind. But he's been good ahead of conference. He's done some good interviews. He's spoken very well. I think he's starting to find his feet. I think kind of matters beyond his control probably mean that Labour are now the party that's going to challenge the SNP, but that's not through Conservative voters going to Labour. That's through unhappy SNP voters going back to Labour after they've realised belatedly, probably 10 years too late, if you ask me, that the SNP have done nothing in these former Labour areas to make their lives better. Anyway, I think Douglas Ross, I was kind of struggling for a good week, but I think Douglas Ross has had a good week and hopefully he'll have a good conference. Look forward to his speech tomorrow. Bad week, Angus Robertson.
yes. Explain why.
Well, there was a story in the Sunday Times revealing that he was paid a secret top-up of £33,000 a year from the Westminster short money that obviously back then they had plenty of. None of the other MPs and indeed no one else in the party knew about it. But while he was Westminster leader, he was given this secret top-up to his pay out of public funds, and it's only emerged at the weekend. I think in any other week, that would have been a huge story.
I haven't really seen much explanation from Angus on this, have you?
No, none at all. Just, I mean, I think the explanation seemed to be that as the official opposition, Labour, or whoever's the official opposition, they're entitled to extra money from the public purse. Mm-hmm. And the feeling seems to be that with back then when they had 55 MPs, it was a bit unfair that the SNP leader didn't qualify, so they just decided to give him it in their own.
It could have been justifiable if the entire group had signed it off rather than the executive, which is a much smaller band of MPs. So I think that...
it's very odd.
Yeah.
Very odd.
It was very odd. It was a good story, and as I say, I think any other week, Angus would have found himself facing a lot more questions, but as it is, obviously, problems within the SNP.
Indeed. Okay, listen, that's great. That wraps up for another week. I hope you enjoyed the latest Planet Holyrood. Thanks again to Ben and to Hannah for their robust analysis. Hope to see you again next week.
It's important we look at the facts. Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.